You guys have changed so much over the years, and you said that this new album is, you were going to try to do something different, and I think you have.
When we got together to start, it was February of 2021. So it enabled us to take a big swing, and it was just a joyous process. So fun. And most of the songs from the ground up together versus the way we've done in the past, which is to democratically weed through them. And what that did is it enabled us to sort of cross-pollinate between them musically and thematically and lyrically. There's a lot of references to other songs, you know, lyrically and musically. And, you know, and hopefully the album comes across as an album that people can listen to however they want. But if you want to kind of get into it and look for Easter eggs, you'll find them in there.
Well, the thing that was interesting to me, because I talk to a lot of musicians time to time, and the thing is that as you spend more time together and you get different interests and you're hearing different things, I know musicians listen to a lot of different sounds and have different influences, yourself included. But this really, I think, presents how much range you guys have in your interest in music and in your abilities, because we're hearing different sounds that I don't think people have heard before.
Just due to the amount of time that we had to cook this whole thing up. Also, you know, when working with our producer, Eric Valentine, he really brings things to life. A lot of times we would come to him and be like, we want to get this kind of sound. In general, we don't like to have drums. We've had drums on two Nickel Creek songs. And in general, we like to find more like acoustic ways or non-drum ways to get percussion to rhythm. And so he really helps with that. And we were in this amazing studio, RCA Studio A in Nashville, which is a very historic studio that's incredible and it's really big and enables you to get a lot of sound. Like, he had at any given time, there's probably like 20 microphones set up all around the studio getting room sounds. A lot of that is due to him, but you know, he kind of enables us to sort of dream up different sounds and he'll facilitate them.
The other thing that came to my mind as I was listening was because you and Sarah have hosted your own family hour, as you've called it over the years, bringing so many varied musicians together, you naturally demonstrate how collaborative you are, apart from the unit of the three of you who have been together for, I guess, more than 30 years now.
Yeah, 35.
How much did that influence your thinking in putting these songs together? Because, for example, just where the long line leads, it sounds like Sarah wants to plug in a Strat and start jamming on that rather than the fiddle.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think doing the family hour for Sarah and I, you know, we've been doing that for 22 or 23 years now, has really opened us up to a lot of new styles and genres that we, you know, wouldn't necessarily be around otherwise. And from the get-go, it's been that way. We grew up playing bluegrass and folk, and in that tradition, you get together with a lot of people who are like-minded, who know the same songs, and jam and play, and, you know, put together. There's a very, you know, long tradition of just getting together with people you haven't played or made music with and putting on a show on stage. And it's great. You know, that's a big part of that tradition. So getting to do that in Los Angeles with people who aren't from our bluegrass tradition has been really, really fun. And it's just another language, you know, and you can kind of learn things from them. And we certainly, you know, that's a big part of coming back together with Sarah and Chris as a band, palette that we have as a band. And I can't remember, there was another part of your question I'm forgetting now.
Just the fact that you've been hearing so many different sounds from the musicians that you bring together that it's kind of seeped into what you were doing.
You were talking about Long Line. Yeah. Sarah's really channeling some kind of very loud and joyous energy in that one. I think that's one that Chris had a melody and chords for it, but no lyrics for like a verse. I think, yeah, we had the verse. As is the case with a handful of songs on this album, or a lot of them actually, when, you know, there's a thing that happens where one of us will bring a song, and, you know, or like in this case, Chris had a melody and chords. And it's Sarah, you know, either Sarah said, can I sing this? Or Chris said, I think you should sing this. Holding Pattern was that way. I had this guitar parts and Chris was like, what I think is a good idea for a verse. And I would love to sing it. It's like, awesome. You know, it's so cool. And that's a great way to get a new sound. It's like if someone's singing something that they didn't directly write, but one of us, you know, other two people in the band did, that's a great way to get something you wouldn't have got otherwise. But yeah, that long line is kind of a, it's kind of a mix of like an old traditional bluegrass and like a garage punk band, you know?
On that point, when I spoke with Chris a couple of years ago, he had just come off of the Live From Here experience where he challenged himself every week. He had to come up with a new song, which is completely different from the normal process of most composers where, you know, it sort of comes when it comes and you have a little bit more time to go through things. Did you notice anything different from his approach to bringing songs into you guys from having known that he did that before, that he was under deadline pressure in the past and maybe he's trying to push you guys a little bit to get things finished?
That's interesting. I'm sure that there was new things. I mean, one thing that was different, the three of us getting together to write this, was that we're a lot less precious with the ideas as we go along. We used to, I think, as we're writing, being like just getting hung up on like, I'm trying to find the perfect word, the perfect rhyme for this or the perfect melody. And now we're all a little bit more like, let's just do broad strokes. Let's get the idea out. Let's not get hung up on the little things. And I think that that's something that he certainly probably had to do in that scenario with Live From Here. It was like there has to be a song and there's a deadline and it's coming towards you and you can't wait for the perfect and not do it because you have to. And I think there's something really beautiful in that. It's the old adage of not letting the perfect get in the way of the good. Is that it? Yeah. You know, you can work on the songs later. They're not final. It's not the end of the creative process. But I think definitely having a deadline, it enables you to work quicker and not get hung up on things. And in that way, the creative process just flows a lot. It's just more healthy.
Since you're a guitar player, I want to talk about guitars because one of the things that I always find interesting when I'm looking through acoustic guitar is how they break things down by technical things, which I can't get through my head. I mean, I've been playing a long time. I still hack around, but I'm not a professional musician. You have, it seems to me, evolved your style over time, as I would expect. You mentioned in the interview with Jeff Rogers how you were trying to get some different tones with your guitar, and you mentioned the fact that you were trying to get away from maybe some jazz sounds, making more open sounds, because in bluegrass and in folk, the rhythm section is really the guitar in most bands because there's no drums. You do finger picking, you do flat picking. You have to move very quickly. It's kind of like when I talked to Molly Tuttle not long ago. You get a free range to do a lot of different things that you can hear that you want others to hear.
As a bluegrass guitar player, 1 foot in the rhythm section and 1 foot in the lead and harmony section. In Nickel Creek, I find myself when we're playing, like say a song like Lighthouse, where there's sections where there's just a lot of two beat happening, where I'm thinking of Chris's backbeat like a snare and the downbeat of the bass as a kick drum, and I'm sort of in the middle, kind of connecting to like a, ride cymbal or hi-hat kind of. And so, that's one thing I love about guitar is you're playing both those roles at the same time and sort of, there's a bunch of different ways to bridge the rhythm section and the harmony and solo sections. I love that. You know, it's when you're in a quartet like Nickel Creek, everyone has multiple roles, and that's really fun. I mean, the fewer people you have, the more roles you have to play if you're going to try and cover the bases. I'm grateful to have grown up in the bluegrass tradition because they sort of stress, first of all, playing solid rhythm is the most important. If you can solo, great. Singing harmony, you've got to be able to sing harmony. Lead is great. If you can play multiple instruments, that helps. And so they kind of, within the bluegrass tradition, there's like this, not an expectation, but you're encouraged to learn as much as you can about all the different aspects of music. And I love that, and our teachers really stress that as well. It's something I'm grateful for, having grown up, with that. And there are, other kinds of music where you're kind of taught to do one specific thing. I'm thinking of like a French horn player in an orchestra or something like that. It's more of a narrow role. Not to say you can't do amazing things with a French horn. Of course you can. But there's a certain kind of teaching that is like, here's your part. You do this well, and that's great. But it's not really that way in bluegrass. Yeah, you have to switch. And there's a lot of songs where I have to switch between flat pick, playing with the pick, and go straight to finger picking. And so I do a lot of finger picking. I mean, most of it is with a pick and these two fingers versus thumb and these two fingers.
As opposed to a Travis pick kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing that because I had to switch back and forth quickly and you can't, there's no time to grab a pick. I mean, a lot of people do that too. That's a small example of, you know, having to kind of do a couple things at once.
As I was mentioning, we talked about trying to maybe not be so jazz sounding in some of the things you're doing. But as I looked through the transcription that Jeff did in there, I'm looking at major seventh chords and suspendeds and fifths. You just don't find that, I don't think, most of the time in bluegrass. You see it in jazz. You never see it in rock and roll because it's, you know, it's three chords. And occasional minor chord sounds good.
There are a lot of you know, musical colors that we try to go for. Harmony is transcends genre. Certainly within the bluegrass genre, it's tough to find a major seven chord. There are a few color chords that are kind of legal, but that's one thing we really strive for is to explore harmonically, and that's vocally and as well as harmonically. But, you know, I mean, the jazz kind of chords, a lot of those end up being colors that we don't use that much in, you know, in Nickel Creek. And certainly there are some times, but there's not a lot of flat 9, 13s, you know, sharp 13s. Like, there's not a ton of that kind of stuff. It's more like slightly different. There are certain kind of harmonies that just sort of will take you out of a feeling. And so there's not a ton of like traditional jazz chords that I play, but there's certainly some weird ones that are very hard to play that don't sound hard to play, but they are.
Every composer, singer, songwriter approaches composition differently. Some start with the music, some start with the lyrics. Some people actually can do both at the same time, I guess. Where do you fall on that scale? Where do you come from?
I'll take what I can get inspiration-wise. Sometimes there'll be a lyric idea. Many times it's a melody. I'll have a melody and chords, and I'll put it in my voice memo, and it'll sit around until I think of a lyric that seems to fit. A lot of times what I do recently is I start from the title first. I have a list of future song titles in my phone that have like something in them that feels like I could mine out a bunch of ideas. They're intriguing in some way. So I tend to do that a lot, starting from title, and a lot of times I'll write the chorus first and then kind of spiral out from there and write verses, essentially like writing the point of the song. The start of the song is, for me, is like, I want to figure out why I'm singing a song. And then I can write lyrics and verse lyrics that support that. Versus what I used to do, which was just like shoot in the dark, try and write a verse. And maybe that leads to a chorus. I don't know what the chorus is going to be, but maybe lightning will strike and I'll find it. That's how I tend to do it personally. The way we did it with this Nickel Creek album was largely instrumental stuff first and lyrics to follow. Although a lot of lyrics happened at the time where it'd be like, you know, we would know what the song was going to be called, like Holding Pattern. We're like, we know it's going to be called Holding Pattern. And we know the chorus will roughly be what it is on the album. Verse lyrics kind of followed. When we worked on this album, it was mostly instrumentally focused with the idea of the song, but nothing concrete.
Coming back together and doing these tours now, after not being together for such a really long period of time, how challenging was it to decide what the set lists were going to be and how you were going to bring some of the favorites of your established fan base and introducing yourself to new folks, and also with this really new sound for you with this disc?
Every artist is most excited about their new material, but the fans haven't heard it yet. They haven't lived with it like they live with the old material. And so I think we decided early on, if a set list is like 20 to 22 songs, which I think is typical for us, maybe 7 will be from the new album. Maybe even almost 3/4 are from older albums. And we try to make the set list equal representation of the albums, you know? So like there's, you know, a certain amount from each album. If your favorite album was this side, you'll hear a few songs from that. And then, you know, it's also the new material, it gets framed in a way the old material kind of frames the new material, and you know, you can pepper it in. And I think the most we do is 2 new songs in a row. You know, if you hear that, you hear 2 new songs, don't worry. You'll hear an old one right after it. And it'll probably be a good old one. but you know, the set list, when you're starting a tour like this, it's like you have an idea of what you want to do in terms of set list, but you kind of learn as you go from the audience and from yourselves on stage, you know, what works and what doesn't, what songs flow well into the next song, what's a good ender. The ender you thought was going to be a good ender turns out it's not as good as this one. You just learn as you go.
I want to wrap up with a question I always ask towards the end, and it's always an interesting response. What's the question nobody asks you that you think they should ask you? about you or the band and what's going on.
That's a really good question. I don't know. You asked some really good ones. We've been doing these VIP things at our shows where after sound check, people come and ask us questions. And we've gotten some really thoughtful ones that we've never been asked before. The question I never really need to hear again is how do you categorize your music or what do you call your music? And because I always am like, that's not our job and I don't care. That's someone else's job. It doesn't matter what I say about our music is, you know. But I love talking about the creative process and how these songs come together, and also technical stuff like you were asking him about, you know, finger picking and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for you on that. I apologize.
That's okay. The answers are the answers. On the other hand, another question is what's the question no one gives you that they should?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It would be maybe, you know.
Or rather, let's put it this way. What should people know that they don't know?
A question that doesn't get asked a lot that is important is people always ask, like, when people ask what your influences are, usually people answer with what they want their influences to have been and not necessarily what was influencing them. And by that, I mean, what was the music that was being played around your house when you were a kid by your parents that influenced you? People want to say like Beatles and bands that people are all familiar with it, that kind of give you cred. But really the answer is like, you know, whatever was being played around your house that, you know, may or may not have anything to do with the kind of music you make now, you know? And for me, that was a lot of Celtic and classical music and folk, like real traditional kind of folk music, or like there's this Beach Boys live album that my parents had, like a vinyl, you know, they had a small vinyl collection. And my parents had good taste in music though. Cause I mean, I remember looking through their record collection and there was like the, you know, the first Bob Dylan album, the first band album. There was this Beach Boys live album that sounded horrible. It was just like the screaming crowd was mixed so loud that it was just unlistenable. But as a kid, it was so great for me. It was like my first rock and roll experience, you know, like I didn't really, popular music wasn't really a part of our household. But that was one of the first ones where I was like, oh, I can really feel the energy here. It was like pretty moving. But I don't, I'm always curious about what people, you know, people's real influences were early on, like before they were choosing to be influenced, you know, before they were like buying albums and listening and deciding to be like this or that. I'm always curious about that. And for me, it was a lot of that stuff, you know, a lot of Celtic and classical stuff like Bach and Vivaldi. My parents were listening to until we found bluegrass and then kind of really dove into that at first.